film about? What's it really about? What genre does it hit? What is really being said? What's really being seen? That's what you're talking about.
Hello and welcome to The Intermission, a podcast on content. I'm Nitin Sundar and I'm once again joined by Naren. Hello Naren, how are you?
You know, Macha, my enemies call me Naren, but my people call me Akku Kulkan.
Excellent. What a beautiful way to cue the fact that we are going to be talking about Wakanda Forever today, the sequel to Black Panther. Look forward to a very enriching discussion on Wakanda Forever. But before we get there, before we get started with today's podcast, firstly, a big thanks to you, dear listener, and to all the friends of the podcast who have taken time out to listen to our first 5 episodes and to share a lot of interesting and useful feedback as well. In no particular order, thanks to Tony Sebastian, Sushmita Sundaram, Samir Mohan, Murli Satagopan, Shyam Nagarajan, Karthik K, Nidhi Rastogi, Deepak Ramanidhi, Bharat Ram, Divya Rohit and Nikhil Rola, and how can I leave out Mithun Sundar, arguably the father of this podcast. It's through Mithun that Dodi and I even know each other. Thank you, everyone. Dodi, you've also been getting...
Mithun will always want to take credit for having introduced me to everyone in my life.
Yeah,
I also want to thank... I don't have a lot of names, but I do want to thank Ganesh, a bunch of other people whose names I don't know. My sister has been sending me screenshots and forwarded messages. So thank you to everybody who's been listening. Thank you to my sister Pratibha for being one of the champions of the podcast and pushing it out to a lot of other people. And of course, I want to thank your mom for her colleagues' feedback. And of course, your dad as well for that wonderfully sweet message that he sent. Always yes. Great to have champions. Thank you, everyone. Keep listening and keep giving us feedback. We want to see how we can improve and how we can continue to have conversations that you would like to listen to.
Yo, keep going, Pratibha. Please keep listening to us. And thanks again to the entire Sundar family who tend to listen to the various podcasts that I'm a part of. So thanks a lot to the doting family that listens to us. So Naren, I normally refer to you as Dodi, but today, should I just stick to calling you Namor?
I have many names. My people call me Akku Kulkan, but my enemies call me Namor.
Let's get right into our review and reaction to Wakanda Forever then.
So today we're going to talk about Black Panther Wakanda Forever. It's the sequel to the smash hit Black Panther. I'm just going to quickly read out the IMDb summary. The people of Wakanda fight to protect their home from intervening world powers as they mourn the death of King T'Challa. Simple, basic, yeah. Doesn't really get into a lot of what's happening in the movie, but that's fine. I think it's a good synopsis. Within the MCU, let's start talking about the history of the Black Panther. This character first appeared in Civil War, one of the Captain America movies, the third Captain America movie, in fact. I rewatched it. I think you rewatched some of it.
I did rewatch the... I rewatched a couple of scenes.
Okay. So for me, I did the whole rewatch of Civil War and I felt that he's probably the only character in Civil War who has a proper full arc. Even Captain America kind of end on a limbo. They've not quite solved the fight that they were having. It's just, we'll deal with the repercussions later. Same for Iron Man, same for Bucky. And it's kind of stunning that they managed to introduce a whole new character that has their proper mini arc within the thing. And I think Civil War, that way, is among my more favorite MCU movies. They also introduced Spider-Man in there. It was a properly Avenger movie without having the Avenger title at the beginning of it.
Was that Spider-Man's first movie as well in the MCU?
Yes. Yes, he gets introduced in there. And then the Sony Spider-Man movie comes out. I think it was a good entry into Black Panther and into T'Challa as well. That's where the inciting incident starts. The father dies and he becomes the king, right? So
yeah,
Black Panther itself, the movie is dealing with the repercussions of what happens in Civil War. But I did want to point out one particular line of dialogue that happens in Civil War. And it's kind of interesting given A, how the story goes, and B, what we know has happened even with Chadwick Boseman.
In my culture, dead. It's not the end. It's more of a stepping off point. You reach out with both hands and bust and Sekhmet They lead you into the green veld where you can run forever.
Right, so he's talking about his dad's, the afterlife.
Yeah.
And how their culture, the Wakandan culture, deals with the afterlife. And it's kind of a little difficult to watch, to hear him talking about death, knowing that he passed away so suddenly.
Yep.
I think nobody was really expecting it. We didn't know. Nobody knew he was unwell.
Yeah, in fact, even you did not know that Chadwick Boseman was ailing, was it? Okay.
Yeah, no. I mean, it was not public at all. Like, even the Marvel family, nobody knew about it. It was completely a private thing.
Okay.
And it happened fairly early on into the pandemic. So it was one of those big deaths that happened around the pandemic that didn't have anything to do with...
That's right.
This thing. So it was a little... I think it was quite shocking at the time. And they were in early production... pre-production for Black Panther Wakanda Forever as well. So they had to do a lot of rejigging and reshuffling. But I think we can come to that when we talk about the movie itself. So here in Civil War, I thought it was a good introduction in terms of, you know, just giving him a full storyline, talking about death, talking about even revenge and vengeance. He's the only noble character in the movie eventually. Not just coming from the bearing of the character being like regal and noble, but also his actions. He's the one who comes to the right conclusion at the end of the movie, saying that you know, vengeance is pointless, fighting is pointless, we need to find a solution beyond this. So even our titular heroes of the movie, the Captain America and, well, Iron Man as the secondary lead character, they don't reach that point until well after this movie.
Yeah.
It's interesting that he gets to really sum up the point of that movie in some sense.
And he takes the Winter Soldier into Wakanda, right, to heal him as well.
The Wakanda that you can see in the post-credits of Civil War isn't really the Wakanda that we see later, because they hadn't yet started working on that and they hadn't figured out their look and everything. And we'll talk a little bit about the first Black Panther movie as well. But I feel actually that this is a much more interesting and complete arc. I have some issues with even the way his arc is dealt with in Black Panther. But yeah, over to you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your viewing of the Black Panther? I know you watched it.
This is, after all, a conversation on Wakanda Forever, right? And as I've shared with you, I do have certain reservations about where the MCU has gone after, you know, the end of the Phase 3, so to speak, right? Starting with the TV shows, I think they really got into television in a big way, right? In the last couple of years or so, starting with WandaVision, Falcon and Winter Soldier, the Loki show, and a bunch of other shows, and the movies as well, right? And I feel somewhere around down the line, I think the magic...
Much as say Loki, I don't say Loki. Loki sounds like the best. All our North Indian listeners will be like, oh, I'm feeling hungry now.
Touche, but I think saying Loki probably reflects my opinion on the show better than if I were to say Loki. So yeah, fair point.
Fair.
Yeah, I do feel that somewhere down the line, the magic seems to have gone. It seems a lot more like, you know, the goose that lays the golden eggs now. And there is an endless cash grab that seems to be underway with a lot of the new fare that the MCU has been putting out. I know that they're trying to take the franchise in a certain direction. They're trying to, you know, bring in more diversity, bring in new characters and all of that. But somewhere, I don't know, and we'll probably get into it in some detail in a bit. But I do feel somewhere down the line, the magic seems to have gone. And in that light, right, before we get into Wakanda Forever, I did rewatch The Black Panther, and it just brought back, you know, a lot of these thoughts to the fore. What I've been feeling after watching the new Doctor Strange movie, the new Spider-Man movie, which obviously was very popular, didn't work all that well for me. I didn't even bother to go and watch Love and Thunder, right? That's where I've reached. And I'm someone, as you're aware, I'm someone who rewatched the first 21 odd movies, you know, thrice back to back, like the way I rewatched Breaking Bad or Mad Men. So that's where I was, right? Yeah.
I do remember the phase in which you kept repeating an important piece of dialogue from Doctor Strange.
Yes.
Dormammu.
Dormammu.
I've come to bargain.
I've come to bargain, yes. Indeed.
I've come to bargain. Dormammu. 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 I've come to bargain. Dormammu.
But yeah, Black Panther. Obviously, Black Panther was a movement, right? It brought the African-American world together in a way that nothing in pop culture probably has done in the past, right? And the best of everything that Marvel and Disney and MCU, the big studio has to offer when it chooses to put its powers behind saying something powerful and important. And at the same time, while making a fantastic standalone movie, you can leave aside all the race commentary that Black Panther had. to say. And it was still a fantastic movie. It had great action sequences, great characters, a great antagonist. It had everything going for it. Shades of Grey. And I think that's one of the things that I like even about Wakanda Forever. It's not just Shades of Grey, actually. I should actually correct myself there. Because that's easy to do, right? Showing that the good guys have a grey side to them. And what this tries to show, or rather what the Black Panther universe, and maybe it's Ryan Coogler, I don't know enough about comic books themselves and what the lore says, but the antagonist in both these movies, right, both in Wakanda Forever and in Black Panther, where you had Killmonger, it's almost, a quirk of fate that these people ended up being the antagonists, right? It could so easily have been the other way around.
Yeah.
Like Killmonger, at the end of the day, was, part of the same lineage. It just happens to be the Black Panther's cousin, T'Challa's cousin, and he was orphaned at a young age by the king. We know what the story was, and the reasons, the cause that he was fighting for was not really bad, right? And he was shaped by the circumstances of his childhood, and his interpretation of how to deal with it and how to deal with the world was not necessarily wrong, unfair.
Not justified, yeah.
It was not justified, yeah, exactly. And what that juxtaposition of Killmonger versus T'Challa, placing that in squarely in the real world where, black people go through the experience that they do, and showing how T'Challa himself comes to terms with the choices that Killmonger has made and with the choice that his father made in killing his uncle all those years back and leaving that child behind, and the reckoning that, he goes through, and the journey that he goes through.
Spoilers for Black Panther, and of course, also spoilers for Wakanda Forever as we get into it.
Yes, the spoiler bumper music out of nowhere. Yeah. I thought, there was text, there is subtext, and then there is something more, right? And it works as a popcorn extravaganza. It works as a movie if you want to go deeper into understanding culture and race and what they were trying to say. And you could see why that movie meant so much for the African American community. And that's continued, right? Like, I should actually, before we even speak about Wakanda Forever, I should mention, I stay in Dubai. And this was probably the fourth or the fifth movie that I've gone to watch at the cinemas. I went for Ponniyin Selvan some time back. I was the only person sitting in the multiplex. It was a freaky experience. I went for Bullet Train, I think 2 to 3 months into its run. Me and my wife Shruti were the only people in the cinema hall and so on. This one, we watched it on the first Friday night. So obviously it was opening weekend and all that. Packed hall, and you had big numbers of African American people who had come in groups, and this was like a celebration and a festival, and I would even say a bit of a public mourning of Chadwick Boseman for them, right? Which is something that the movie indulges all of us in. I think one of the best parts of this movie was that it did that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, before we get into those details, I watched this movie at the Roxy Extreme. They don't unfortunately sponsor the show, though we would love it if they would. I'm reading from their website. At 423 square meters, you could put two standard tennis courts together and Roxy Extreme will still be bigger in size. Crystal clear laser projection, heart pounding surround sound, and the most comfortable seats in the business. Now that's how movies are meant to be watched. This is the biggest screen, by the way, in all of Middle East and North Africa. So,
of course,
it is a proper Dubai experience. Yeah,
Dubai got a Dubai, right?
Yes, exactly.
It's never Dubai unless there's a proper superlative attached to it.
Absolutely. Right. So all of that. So it was the perfect setting to go and watch, a movie like Black Panther. And I must say, Wakanda Forever did not feel like Black Panther to me. And we will go into those details in a bit.
For me, Black Panther, the first movie, completely agree with everything you said. It was almost a movement. It was a flashpoint. Also a breath of fresh air at that point, because it had started to get a little stale. We were getting, third movies, second and third movies from everybody else. So it was really not the same stuff all over again, not the same kind of heroes and not the same kind of spaces and designs and looks and all of that. And of course, Chadwick Boseman's great. Michael B. Jordan, fan from a very, very long time, all the way from his Wire days as Wallace, as a young little kid. And it seems to me that he's constantly kind of playing some version of that role.
Wallace had not died in the projects, right?
Yeah.
He would probably have become Killmonger. And that, in a way, would have been an even sadder story than Wallace dying in the projects.
Where's Wallace at? Where's the boy, String? Where's Wallace? Where the fuck is Wallace? Where the fuck is Wallace? Where's Wallace, String? String! Where the fuck is Wallace?
Spoilers for The Wire as well, season one. And even after that, the next thing I saw him in was in Friday Night Lights. I don't know if you've seen the show. It's a football coach show set in Texas. He comes in season 4. And again, he's playing kind of an older version of Wallace in some sense. Not drugs and all, but still, unfortunately, maybe the right phrase to use is kind of the typical African-American youth, a little misguided or a little lost, let down by society, let down by the circumstances around them and struggling to find a way out of that. For the character in Friday Night Lights, it's playing football. Of course, he was in Creed, he was in Fruitvale Station, both by Ryan Coogler. So he's been Ryan Coogler's, you know, muse for a very long time. I think there's an alternate history also where it would have been Michael B. Jordan as Black Panther.
Wow.
Except that I think they took some time to decide who Black Panther would be. And by that time, Michael B. Jordan was on such a rise. You have the situation where any big actor, male or female or whatever gender, as they hit big, you're always some studios trying to lock you down into one franchise, or you want one popular superhero kind of thing. And he bet on Fantastic Four from Fox, and he was the Human Torch, which incidentally was played by Chris Evans in the earlier set of Fantastic Four movies.
Greatest crossover
in
franchise building history.
So he ended up taking that, and I think he got locked into that, and that's around the time when they then decided that they were going to do Black Panther. So there is an alternate history where it would have been him. And part of why he came as Killmonger is again Ryan Coogler wanting to work with him and continue their relationship. But yeah, that was powerful. Like you said, the idea of having not so much good guy versus bad guy, but an ideology or a way of thinking is what's under attack or is what is in opposition.
Sorry, without meaning to interrupt, there is no podcast of ours that goes without me pulling a random tangential Kamal Haasan reference. So here goes. Alavandan, also known as Abhay in Hindi, where Kamal Haasan plays twins. One of them is a cop. The other one ends up in a, you know, insane asylum and becomes a psycho killer. Kids who were separated at birth, right? And literally the toss of a coin decides who goes which way. So there is an evil foster mom who is, you know, sort of wag the dog or rather is influencing the dad in a wrong way. And one kid gets to stay with the parents and the other kid is taken care of by the benevolent uncle. Toss of a coin decides who is who, right? And then these two characters become, you know, protagonist and antagonist, all of that. Anyway, yeah, I was reminded of that as I tend to be.
Paithyam madri illa. Paithyam. Indha nalamaikku nee thaan kaaranam. Idhu on thappu thaane? Ay, yaan thappa. நான் உனக்காக செஞ்ச தியாகம் என் தப்பு. ஜூவில் இருக்கிற மிருகம் மாதிரி நான் அனுபவிக்கிற தனிமை என் தப்பு. பூ விழாமல் தலை விழுந்திருந்தா யோசிப்பார். இந்த தப்பெல்லாம் உன் தப்பாக இருக்கும். நான் கம்பிக்கு அந்த பக்கம், நீ இந்த பக்கம்.
Of course, all of the other fun stuff, Wakanda Forever, the salute, all of that became so big. People are doing it to each other. I think it was a lot of fun. I was in Thailand during my diving break that I had taken. So I came back to the mainland. I was living on an island. I came back to the mainland just for that weekend, just to watch Black Panther.
Yeah.
Caught up with some friends of ours in Bangkok. Watched it, I think, 3 times over the weekend. I was there for the weekend. So I watched Thursday night. Then I watched Friday with the whole gang. Then Saturday I watched it again, and Sunday I headed back to my island. But yeah, super fun. Everybody cheering in the theater.
Yeah, I think the bigger influence, biggest influence it had on me was I would randomly go up in front of people and say, "I am T'Challa, son of T'Chaka."
I am Prince T'Challa, son of King T'Chaka.
You have to hand it to the MCU. They've really gotten people to come out and do this kind of communal watching, just what you were talking about. A lot of people in the theater together cheering. I think in a time when we've gotten so used to watching movies in our home, you still come out for an event. We can quibble about which ones are good or bad or whatever. They've really got us back to the early glory days of wanting to watch a movie in a theater with other people, cheer, see expressions, see, you know, people reacting to stuff happening on screen.
Watra Dodi, as a South Indian, how can you say this? Like, haven't you been watching all the stuff?
Of course. I was going to connect it to all the Indian movies also. But to do this in Hollywood after a long time, I think that's something you have to give some credit to MCU for having figured that out over the last 10, 12 years, how many ever years that they've been, 2008, for 14 years. Yeah, so the only thing now on rewatch, and I felt this even the first time with Black Panther, I do feel that T'Challa's arc is actually not very clear, because he has started to, and this is like a very minor quibble, even before Killmonger comes to Wakanda, he has already questioned Zuri Forest Whitaker about what happened to that kid, why did you, how could you leave a kid back and all of that. So he's already sympathetic. So it's not exactly clear why in the throne room scene he suddenly goes fully negative, right? I get it. You need him to go on the opposite side. You have to create the conflict. But it was not entirely clear to me. In fact, at that point when I was first watching it, I thought the movie would go with him saying, you're my brother.
Yeah.
Dad is guilty of having screwed you over. Come and join me. Let's figure this out. And they work together a little bit. But then the ideologies clash. And then Killmonger says, you know what? That's what I thought it would be. I thought they would actually work together a little bit. But he would not take Killmonger's counsel on what to, on the method of doing whatever. And then Killmonger would say, you know what? Screw this. I wanted family, but you're not my family. I wanted home, but you're not my home because you don't agree with my ideology. And therefore, now I'm going to challenge for king. So I thought there would be a little bit of that before.
I have a response to that. I see where you're coming from, because I agree that T'Challa going from, you know, being sympathetic and understanding that his father had committed wrong to suddenly, you know, going to war, literally didn't, that arc didn't work out. But to look at it from MBJ's side, from Killmonger's side, right? I would actually say the experiences that have shaped Killmonger, he wasn't really looking for family. He was wronged so much, right, in his life. And he was a stand-in for the wronged African-American person who is turning to violence to correct the wrongs.
Agreed. But I guess those two pieces move together, right? If you decide not to have, if you had decided that the way to write this would be Killmonger's, T'Challa saying, you're my brother, come and sit next to me, we should do this together or whatever. Then you would have also written a little bit of why I'm hurt. I'm looking for family. And he brings it up later. When I was a child, my father used to tell me stories. So I've always been waiting to come back home to see
the sunsets.
Yeah. So you could have seeded that in it. And I would not be surprised if an earlier draft had that and then it became just too long to shove into a movie and they then excise the bit out and put it directly into account.
Good point there, actually. So Black Panther runs at about 2 hours and 15 minutes and Wakanda Forever runs at 2 hours and 45 minutes. So lame joke here. In Tamil, you say Wakanda, it means if you sit. So Wakanda Forever, literally that movie, you sit out and you don't get up. No interval also, watching in Dubai. So yeah, Wakanda Forever, really. I felt it was really long, but
well
fair
done,
enough.
Bacha. Hat tip. But yes, one of my complaints about Wakanda Forever is the fact that it's like really over stuff. In terms of how it affected stuff, like just a little quick side story. So the MCU is constantly in, like, they're in factory production, right? So it's just one after the other, not even after the other. They're running parallel, things are overlapping. After Black Panther was shot, but before it came out, they had already started... They pretty much had Infinity War complete and ready in terms of
most of the shooting
done. So when they were doing test, there's that bit where Captain America says, okay, I know a place we can go where we'll be safe. And then they start flying to cut and they start flying towards Wakanda and you can see Africa and all. In the first few test screenings, there was like no reaction because nobody knows where they're going and who they're meeting, right? And if you're a major comic book fan, you know it's Wakanda, but you've not seen it. You've not already experienced it and everything.
Yeah, with the music, with the drums.
Yeah. What happened was, they were having a bit of muted responses. And around the time Black Panther, the movie came out, and then when they did test screenings again, people started cheering the moment the music started. It was going crazy and they realized that you were missing the first bits of dialogue, so they had to move the music back a little bit so that people can finish their cheer in the previous scene. The moment he says, I know where we can go, the drums start and everything, it changed even like a little bit of the Infinity War edit. And Russo brothers talk about this as well, which also partly explains why, even though there's a big set piece in Wakanda, there's not that much for Shuri or Black Panther to really do. If they knew the success that had happened, they would have given even sometimes you don't know what the reaction is, so you've just, you assume that it's at least neutral, if not good. So you want to go that. They might even have had more of like M'Baku. They might have had more. And I'm sure they did a little bit of adjustment.
Maybe, yeah.
It might have been written a little differently with those scenes as well.
On that note, right, that the point where the ship sort of breaks through, you know, thin air and enters Wakandan airspace, so to speak, reminds me of Atlas Shrugged and John Galt's Gulch. I don't know if you're aware of it. It's something very similar, right? It's an optical illusion through which you need to go. And it's obviously like every kid of that age, when I read that book, I was like blown away. What a great book and all of that. But yeah, that...
Now in hindsight, it's...
In hindsight, it's overblown and it's whatever. That idea has stayed with me. And the first time I saw Black Panther, I remember thinking, oh, wow. Where have we seen this before?
Quickly about Atrus Shrugged, trying to bring a parallel to now. We might think about it differently, but that's the kind of book that you would assume that somebody like Elon Musk, even today, is saying, oh, what a great this thing and what a great idea. He's probably taken on that. I am the genius. I'm just making like a very long connect, but it seems about right that Elon Musk would have.
Elon Musk version of John Galt going on a strike is to burn Twitter down to the ground. Yeah, it's happening. It's happening.
Yeah. We should just talk a little bit about Chadwick.
Yeah.
It had almost become a kind of a joke because he'd been playing all the big heroes. He played James Brown, the singer. He played Jackie Robinson. The first black player in baseball, number 42. And he also played Thurgood Marshall, one of the main civil rights lawyers and activists and who became a part of the Supreme Court. So, you know, it had almost become a joke that he's the guy who plays every important black character ever. Effectively, you can in some sense say T'Challa and Black Panther are part of that lineage canon as well in terms of being heroes and idols to black politics, right? Black lives. I think we can see a lot of effects of the way they had to restructure the movie. I just want to talk a little bit about one interview that Coogler gave recently, because nobody spoke about what the original script was. So recently, Coogler gave an interview saying, you know, while the plot has changed around a little bit, a lot of the things are similar.
Okay.
And the tone of the movie is actually very similar, because even the earlier version of the script he'd written was about grief, was about loss.
Okay.
The arc he had taken was T'Challa has been missing from Wakanda for 5 years.
Oh, because of the snap.
Because of the snap. And he has missed a lot of things, and things have happened in the intervening years that he was not able to be around and to help and etc. And he's dealing with a lot of that.
Oh.
While the usual Namor, whatever is happening.
And the movie picks up, I assume, straight after the final movie. Is that how it was planned?
I didn't get into specifics, but I guess, yeah.
Okay. Soon after, yeah. Soon after the return from the snap, yeah. Got it.
Yeah. But basically, the idea was that he's going to be dealing with having lost 5 years, having not been around, the toll it's taken on his mother, for example, because she's become the queen. Even in this, they say she has taken over the throne again.
Yes.
So, again being during the snap, she was reigning, right? So,
correct.
You know, I think he's correct. Dealing with the troubles that she went through and all of that. And of course, then whatever action story. So, he did speak about how the tone of the movie was going to be somewhat similar. Of course, nobody expected that they would have to rewrite in this way.
Yeah, I think, in fact, on the Chadwick Boseman bit to the movie, and the way the movie starts, I think there has been some commentary that, you know, there was maybe not that much of continuity from Black Panther. It's not very clear what happened, why, you know, we all know why Chadwick Boseman is not in the movie, but there are arguments that, you know, you could have done something, brought in maybe footage from the first movie, etc. What are your thoughts on that? How do you think the joining between the two movies worked for you?
It's a unique situation.
It is.
And I think there's, on the one hand, there's no way to get it right.
Yeah.
So, you know, and there are many ways to get it wrong.
Yeah.
So, I think this was very respectful.
It was.
Properly done. I'm really fine with not having, like, what exactly was it that killed him. It's fine.
Yeah.
It came as such a shock that, you know, it kind of mirrors what happened in real life.
Yeah.
It's not like everybody was aware that he was ill or he was old or something or the other. And, you know, it was a matter of time or whatever. It was just such a sudden thing. And I think the movie kind of helps with that, trying to mirror some of the same reactions and feeling. You can use some old footage if you have. And in fact, they do use, even in some of the flashbacks, there are a couple of shots that were not in the original movie.
Yeah.
And I think they are from outtakes and stuff like that. So at some point, he's smiling in the throne room. That's actually not there in any of the footage earlier. It's not even there in any of the making of and stuff like that. So I think they've gone and scoured some of the outtakes. But they're using that in memories. They're not using that to explain what's happening now, which is fine.
I agree. Yeah. In fact, I fully agree with you. I think they treated this actually in a very, very good way, in a very sensitive and I would say the perfect way, right? Like, because his death was so sudden. It was foisted upon the audience. And literally, people were, you know, out there wanted to grieve in public. We don't, can't put a bow tie around this situation, right?
Yeah.
You can't say.
It is what it is.
It is what it is, right? You can't explain it, right? It's what it is, yeah.
See, they could have done, there are ways to do this badly. They could very well have done
Paul Walker
digital recreation stuff. By the way, Paul Walker thing, not bad.
That's pretty good.
The only other way I would have, the only other movie in recent history that had to deal with something like this on a franchise yes. was Paul Walker's death. And I have to shout out, the way they did it in Furious 7.
Yes.
I thought, we can maybe quibble about whether they should completely have written out his character or whatever they got. But it worked for that movie again. If your theme is about family, whatever, they got his brothers in to come and act for yes. him. They made yeah. it work. But the way they said goodbye to that character.
Yeah, I thought it was a great goodbye for that character. And that was, yeah, I think the timing was also such that they didn't mourn it, they celebrated it. I mean, they didn't celebrate his death, but they celebrated his memory and sent him on his way at the end of that film.
And again, see, you would not expect even MCU at least a little. I mean, obviously, everybody's profit-making enterprises. But you would maybe not have expected nuance or, you know, from something like Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
But as I was watching that movie, I remember watching in the theater, and I'd already read a few reviews that it was respectful. But I was just watching, and I was like, they're going to kill him off in some action sequence. It's going to be so bad. Like, how can you do this? He actually died in a car crash. And I was constantly wondering how they would say goodbye. And the way they did it was so beautiful, right? They were driving, a lot of montage. They're racing again.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember the shot, just as the chorus of that Wiz Khalifa song.
Yeah.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again.
The cars just diverge on this mountain path, and he's in a white car, and he just goes off on his
own
journey.
Drives into the sunset.
Yeah, on his own journey, and that's it. Right? I thought that was
the
standard to beat.
Yes.
That was the standard to beat, and beat is not the right word. This is not a competition.
Yeah.
But I thought Wakanda Forever did an impossible job.
And did it very well. Very well. I agree. Yeah. To go on mute for the Marvel opening montage.
Oh my God.
And pin drop silence in the cinema hall.
Yeah, pin drop silence.
You couldn't hear people. Everyone is grieving.
I actually want to check whether they extended the length of the scene. Or maybe it just felt long because it was mute. I'm not sure. But I suspect it's stretched by 10% or something like that. It feels like it was a little longer. I don't know.
It definitely felt that way. Yes, it felt like that. I do think I didn't sense that, you know, it was actually longer, but I get what you mean. I did sense.
You're in the moment. You're watching actually every little shot that's going past. You're seeing him do the Wakanda Forever salute. You're seeing him smile. You're seeing him put on the mask.
And run. Yeah, and charge, basically. All of that.
A good way to say bye, even starting with that funeral.
Oh, yeah.
Even the funeral was a combination of a celebration. There's dance, there's, you know, drums. So I think that was also very good.
On that celebration part, right? Like, I obviously come from Chennai, where in Tamil Nadu, you have this culture where you have dancers in front of a funeral procession. It's very common, right? And I didn't realize that that's actually a very common sort of theme across cultures. It isn't just restricted to Tamil Nadu. Because when I saw it in the movie, I did the whole Leonardo DiCaprio, just like, hey, Oppari is happening here. But then I went and read up, right? This is actually common across, it happens in New Zealand. The Maoris do the Hakka, which is famous from rugby. They do it at funerals. There are people in many African countries who do this. And I have a pop quiz for you, Dodi, as always. Country Chad, I don't know how you pronounce it, Chad, right? The country Chad has its own version of the funeral dance. Can you take a wild guess what the name of the funeral dance in Chad is?
Oh, no. Where did you go and where did you find this? Also, wow that you found it for Chad.
I basically went to funeral processions or dances at funerals, and there's a Wikipedia page that listed everything. The name of the funeral dance in Chad is Dodi. I'm not making this up.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
fold hands and bow to this. Sure.
Yeah.
Great.
And
what a catch.
In Taiwan, you actually have funeral strippers.
Oh, wow.
So that really is the final journey ends up being probably the most memorable one. But I thought that entire sequence was very powerful. I think the first 10 to 15 minutes of the movie for me definitely packed a punch. Also coming off Black Panther and the news of Chadwick Boseman not being in this movie, etc.
Yeah.
Worked for me.
I also felt a few shades of one of our other favorite shows, The Leftovers, in terms of different approaches to grief. You know, Ramonda is going into, the queen is going into spirituality and ancestors and stuff like that. Shuri wants to bury herself in technology. Lupita Nyong'o's character, Nakia, has just said, you know, I need distance. Yeah. I can't deal with this now. And she's off somewhere else altogether.
Haiti.
Even Okoye doesn't speak directly to it, but there's this whole thing about drowning herself in duty and wanting to just keep doing what she can do to honor the memory of her king. So she has to do the work that she's been doing, and she's honoring that. And I did get a few shades of some sense of similarity to The Leftovers and different approaches to grief.
Great. Yeah, fair enough. Yes.
Maybe best to just kind of, let's see if we can go through the story a bit chronologically, because I feel like there are potentially two or three different movies that are stuffed into one, which is one of the complaints I have with this movie. But first of all, as the movie got into it, you know, you have that little bit of time to grieve T'Challa and time to grieve Chadwick, and then the movie gets going. And you have Angela Bassett in charge.
Yeah.
And for a long time, it felt like it was going to be Angela's movie with Shuri as, you know, eventually going to turn up as Black Panther. Water. But Queen Ramonda seemed like the lead for the good first half of it. And I thought
she's ripped.
She's ripped her arms.
And oh, insane.
God, her arms. They keep showing off her arms. She always has this off-shoulder.
That scene where she walks into the United Nations Assembly or whatever that is and puts the French in their place. My goodness. So good.
I was like, okay, fine. I don't ever want to be on the wrong side of this woman, right? She's just going to like rip you apart.
Yeah.
Want to guess how old she is?
Angela Bassett is...
looking at her arms?
64.
Put that up.
No, I didn't know. What is the number?
64.
Oh! 8 eights, man. 8 square. There you go. Yeah.
But amazing, I thought. First of all, she's acting great, but I was... continuously stunned by her arms. They really kept showing it off as well. So good on her and good on
them.
The crew for realizing it. I thought it was also interesting how she goes out in action.
Yeah.
She doesn't get killed. She's actually saving someone.
That's right. Yeah.
So the first half really felt a lot like it was going to be an Angela movie as the queen or the throne. This is another thing, by the way. Okay, good time to bring it up. I feel like the first Black Panther movie wasn't very clear. See, there's two things, right? There's who sits on the throne and who's the Black Panther.
That's right, yeah.
Those are two different things. T'Challa was the Black Panther while not being on the throne. His father was on the throne. And then he's both Black Panther and King. It's actually not entirely clear in the first movie whether that waterfall fight sequence is for the throne or for the Black Panther.
It is for the throne, right? But good point. I think there is a MCC loss of cricket type situation here.
Because when it happens for both simultaneously and both the times it happens in that movie, right?
I think what it means is, I think the king needs to sign off on who the Black Panther needs to be. Maybe there's some logic of that kind at play probably.
And they're pulling out the Black Panther power through that whatever. But it's basically, I think it's clearer in this movie that it's for the throne.
It's for the throne, yeah.
When we get to the final thing, because she's still the Black Panther.
King gets the first right of refusal to the Black Panther.
And the waterfall thing is for the throne. King or queen?
Or woman king. Yeah, hey, go on.
Woman king. I thought it would be an Angela movie with Shuri by the side, finally deciding to take up the mantle and do whatever because it's necessary. But yeah, I was quite surprised when they killed her off.
And then it became Avatar: The Way of Water. You have the Water Kingdom show up.
Again, there. A couple of interesting things that they did with that, right? First is, of course, I thought very interesting to have. We haven't had that entire side of things. The only Hispanic character, Hispanic leaning character that I can remember from the movies, at least a character who had dialogue and who had a proper role, was in Ant-Man. Michael Peña plays that friend who...
yeah, one of my favorite.
Yes, the fast talking. Brilliant. Is always giving a story.
He remains, by the way, my favorite Latin American character in the MCU.
But here they take it all the way back. So Namor, and I don't know enough about the comics either, but he's one of the original MCU characters. He's probably like the fourth or fifth character that was ever created. And he's originally a Fantastic Four antagonist.
Okay.
But he's also been an antagonist to Wakanda, and he's not always been an antagonist. He's a free spirit type of guy. He's sometimes on their side, sometimes not, but he's always on the side of his people. His thing is my people.
He's very clear, right? Even in the movie, his motivations are very clear, right? He's just irritated that people are coming hunting for vibranium. He doesn't even care if people take vibranium. He is more worried that people are coming for vibranium and they'll find him and his kingdom, right? Which is as clean a motivation as can exist. And he's, don't irritate me, just leave us alone, right? It's a very...
He's got that, again, it's that same colonizing fear, right? We've already seen it over there.
Yes.
When he comes back out and fights. But he's basically, his reaction is literally what Queen Ramonda says at the UN also, that we don't trade vibranium not because of the dangerous potential of vibranium, but because of the dangerous potential of you. People here are the ones who don't know how to deal with shit, and you guys are the problem. It's
correct.
The problem is not the material, the problem is how it's used and how you guys do it. And even Ross brings it up, right? He says, if we were the only country that had vibranium, the kind of things that we would do. And that scene, for all that their arc doesn't really work, is shoehorned in from somewhere else. Julia Louis-Dreyfus's response to that is, yes, imagine, that's all I can imagine. I'm waiting for that day. So she's like taking the complete off. He's like saying it in fear. She's like, bring it on.
The weep suddenly shows up. Yeah. Pretty much in character. But what did you think of Namor? Like the character, the portrayal, and also these are Killmonger's boots that we need to fill as the antagonist. So what was your take?
I liked it. I thought it worked. Talking about the history of Namor, whatever little I know about him.
Yeah.
Is that also Namor was the king of Atlantis.
Yeah.
Which is underwater. But again, a Western idea of what an underwater this is. So here I think they've taken a step back and said, let's not call it Atlantis, let's not westernize that idea.
Yes.
But let's take it here to the Latin American peoples and Mesoamerican, Mayan culture and all of that. And that's where Talokan comes in. I thought that was interesting in terms of continuing the path of saying Africans were not the only colonized people. There were so many others who were colonized, and they all have more or less similar approaches and similar issues that they are dealing with, or similar wounds that they need to fix.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. They also, even the language that they're speaking is some old dialect. They had to go and find this. It's spoken in some tribes in Mexico or whatever, and they are speaking that particular thing. It is some Mayan dialect that still happens to, has not yet died out. It's still a living language.
On that note, right, talking of the lore and language that is used in these movies, the Jabari tribe that showed up, M'Baku, right, in the first part. I think you're smiling already, so you probably know this. Do you know who the god of the Jabari tribe is?
Yes. Which people in India might not have known, because we all watch in India, see, yeah.
Yeah, so we should, go ahead. Please reveal it for our listeners.
Glory to Hanuman.
Glory to Hanuman, apparently, was beeped out by the censor board when this movie, when the first part aired in India. So, the reason I had no idea about this, by the way. So, when I rewatched Black Panther recently and the monkey chants come up, right, where he talks down Ross with the monkey chants, right? I initially, by the way, thought that he was imitating a dog. I didn't realize that those are monkey chants. And then I went and read up, and obviously it makes sense, right? It's again commentary of what happens in football fields, you know, when African-American players show up, the audience, people actually heckle them and all of that, and bananas, and there's some nasty stuff out there.
Which also credit to the first Black Panther, the way they took it and changed it into a point of pride.
Oh, and it's a brilliant, the whole subtext over there is brilliant, right? He also goes on to say, I'll feed you to my kids, and then say, I'm kidding, they're vegetarians, right? We're all vegetarians, and he laughs, right?
I liked his evolution in this movie. I think a lot of this must be rewrites that have come from...
Probably, yes.
The fact that he would have been there as a side character to come and help, he would have been the same kind of, you know, I'm an outsider really, but fine, I'll help you guys. It would have been that if it was T'Challa in the movie.
Part comic relief, part, support, you know, strong support of, you know, one army and all of that.
Yeah. But here, I think he becomes more of, you know, the voice of reason. He's the council. And the way he steps in later and starts almost becoming like a wise friend who's giving the calming counsel at the end. And even tying it in to say, you know, your brother asked me to keep an eye out for you. And I think he kind of hints at the... On my second watch, I felt it. I think he's also aware of the post-credit scene, which we'll talk separately. But it seems to me that he's aware of that also. I don't know why. I get kind of that feel that he might be aware.
To close out that Hanuman point, right? The original gorilla god that the Jabari tribe worships was called Man Ape in the comics, and Man Ape was converted to Hanuman as probably an idea to try and make the movie more appealing to Indian audiences, which then got shot down by the CBSE. And then actually Marvel fans in India were looking forward to the Hanuman scene and were very let down when it did not show. So yeah, double cross after double cross happened.
As you said. But I also like that he got the rousing line when she appears.
The Black Panther lives!
He got that big line. I really love that. One thing I wanted to say about Paramount, I missed saying this. I'd not organized my notes properly. Speaking of connections to strong queens doing amazing things.
Yeah.
She dies saving a child from drowning.
Mahendra Bahubali Pratakali!
Oh, yes.
And I also liked how Killmonger stands up for her, going into extra spoiler territory. When she says, my mother died because of you or whatever. She says something random. He says, don't take that away from your mother. She died saving a child from the lost tribe.
Yeah. Yeah.
She died saving one of us. So don't like make her out to be a victim of circumstance. She went out in action. See, all of those, I think, were changes, right? So even the idea that Killmonger had to come back in a T'Challa version of the movie, he probably wouldn't have.
I don't know. He might have been there. Ryan Coogler is not going to miss an opportunity to bring MVJ.
Yeah, he might have tried. There might have been some other thing.
You would have met him in the astral plane. You would have met him in the astral plane, for sure.
Maybe T'Challa would have thought about him and said, you know, we could have done things differently.
You clearly want T'Challa to have done something differently with him.
Yeah, because he was going that way, right? Anyway, fine. But I think everybody has had to step up in some way or the other. I think this was more for him. He might not have had as much to do in another version of the movie, but here he had to play again an integral role. I think the credit to Ryan Coogler's storytelling that he's managed to somehow bring a bunch of disparate together. And
agreed,
you end up using Killmonger to be able to then talk about, see, vengeance. And if that's what's on your mind when you go into the astral plane, then you're thinking about vengeance. And therefore, you'll see somebody who's talking about vengeance. So she has to go past that to come out.
Correct.
Another interesting thing I wanted to talk about, since we're talking about the astral plane, and this is a very random way to nitpick or whatever, but I think it's just an interesting thing to talk about. The fact that the first movie had a lot of the idea of what you do after death, the astral plane and everything else.
Yes.
And they had to use it again, but they could not have Chadwick back again for it. So they had to like work around things. They wanted to do a funeral for him. If you really want to get nitpicky about it, you'd say, yes, well, where was the funeral for King T'Chaka? And now where's the funeral for Queen Ramonda?
Yes.
But you have to go with it a little bit. And I think they did well, not even bothering to address it, in my opinion. They're just like, you know, look, we know what it is. It's fine. Let's not like do some digital recreation and have T'Challa in the background. It's fine.
No, I agree. Yeah, it was fine. And in fact, in the final scene, Shuri is actually mourning, or rather the robe that she burns or lets go of is actually the one she used to mourn T'Challa, and not the queen, right, who has actually died since.
Yeah, no, but that's kind of explained, because she says a year later is when we do this. The queen takes her. So in theory, that'll happen between the other movies or whatever. So she's still catching up on what she didn't do last time. So it's a year later.
See, the movie is stuffed with a lot that it wants to do, and I'm sure it could have easily been, you know, a couple of movies, right? Or even a mini series on the story of the water god and whatever. No, actually, I'm going the other way with this, because I don't know. I mean, these stories aren't compelling. They're not working for me anymore. Would I really want to see 8 hours of the water god with his flapping wings and whatever, man? It's fine. It's not working. Loki. Had a 8 hour whatever miniseries of him running through whatever time warps, and everything that they've done has been Falcon and Winter Soldier was pointless. It probably deserved to be a movie. Wanda, I keep saying Wakanda Vision, but what I try to say is Wanda Vision. Wanda Vision had an interesting conceit, right, with the black and white footage and, you know, different eras of television and whatnot. At least that was experimental. But then the last 3 or 4 hours, they're just trying to get to a point and finish the whole thing. I'm sorry to say, since the time Thanos died, nothing has worked for me. Absolutely nothing has worked.
At some level, they're trying to figure out what they need to do next. They want to repeat the success that they've had before, but they can't also just
follow
what they did before.
Yeah, so because I don't know if they set out to create a great character when they did the first Iron Man. right, so to speak, or the first Hulk. In fact, the first Hulk wasn't a great movie, right? Or maybe it was an okay movie. It didn't really find its voice. And Iron Man also, Iron Man 2 and Iron Man 3 weren't great movies. But over a period of time, right? And I think by the time they even finished the first phase, you could see that they were hitting upon magic, right?
Yeah, they had got some unifying vision to move towards.
Yes, exactly. And the dialogue was sparkling. The set pieces were nice. The action was good. The action in this movie is okay. It's not great, right? And if you, it really doesn't, it doesn't stand up to Black Panther in any sense of the word. I mean, I saw Black Panther not on Extreme Mission Dubai. I saw it on my TV. And I was blown, right? I'm like, oh, wow, they actually made this, right? Like, the first time around. I mean, you leave aside all the subtext and everything else. As an action movie, Black Panther is a fantastic film.
Yeah.
Now, I know you can't do it again and again, right? That movie is great for a reason. But, I mean, this was okay, and that's fine. Right? Leave Ryan Coogler out of this. But what is the MCU doing, right? Suddenly, Elaine Benes shows up in purple hair, and I'm supposed to be excited, right? She's in the post-credit sequence of one of those many shows that happened.
Yeah.
And then there is, Ironheart, Riri, whatever. She shows up.
So this is all the MCU intervening inside a Black Panther story, right? So Riri has her own TV show coming up.
I'm aware, right? Which is why I'm saying leave Ryan Coogler out of this. This is a complaint about
Julia Louis-Dreyfus is setting up her movie of the Thunderbolts, which is all the villains coming together, which is like Colonel Zemo is going to be the leader.
I would definitely not be watching it because it's not interesting.
This is just unnecessary shoving. Like, you could entirely have taken out as much fun as it was to watch JLD randomly revealing that they used to be married and wanting to jump on his peloton and whatever they cried. As much as that was fun, those were like outtakes, right? They're not part of this movie. We really don't need it. Maybe you need some mention of Ross just to be, somebody has to be telling them what's happening. Somebody is dropping information to that extent because he was part of the first, fine. And he owes a debt and whatever. He's helping from outside.
You have a Ross kind of character which is purely there for plot service. Then you have Elaine Benes. I'm going to keep calling her Elaine Benes because that's all I care about, right? You have someone like that who, because you're trying to expand this universe, build new characters, continue to milk the franchise, so to speak, right? Overall, what is all this doing for me, right? If I've read the books and I probably know these characters, if I know Talukan and I know the, Flappy Bird villain, I probably might appreciate this more, but the whole, and this is the same quibble I had with Ponniyin Selvan as well, right? If you're making a movie, it needs to work for everyone, right? You can't tell me that this movie will only work for you if you had read about it earlier and you know the lore and everything. I didn't know any lore. I didn't know anything about Iron Man. I didn't know anything about any of these characters when I saw the first set of movies, and I thoroughly enjoyed them, right? And I never went back to the books after that either. They still work for me.
I think this movie would have done better without the entire JLD, without the entire Elaine Benes plot, as well as without the entire Riri plot as well. I'm going to go back and look at timelines, but I have a feeling even Riri was added in later. Because I do remember a separate announcement saying that Riri is actually going to be introduced here. When I think about that, I think the original storyline would have been Shuri has made something. It wouldn't have been this Vibranium Detector because they would not have given that off to the public outside. But Namor comes in, kidnaps Shuri, and then Black Panther has to save Shuri. I think that would have been the original run of the thing. Now that Black Panther became missing, Shuri had to jump up to that level. So you need somebody else to be the innocent person who's caught in all this. And then they said, okay, fine, let's get Dominic because Riri because Riri is the next smartest person or whatever.
Is she being set up as the next Iron Man? Is Ironheart sort of the stand-in for Iron Man in the next?
Okay. Supposed to be. Yeah, supposed to be. But I don't think she'll get the importance of Iron. She's just somebody's going to have that weaponry and whatever, and she's supposed to be one of the smarter people around and all of that, so she'll probably help in those things. But she's got her TV show. She's not supposed to as such be in the movies. She might reappear in the movie somewhere. But I think this is what has happened. Like, once Chadwick passed, they had to do a lot of rejigging. And like, see, if this was Shuri being saved here because she created something that, you know, underwater, whatever, if she'd created that, then this is a much cleaner story.
Maybe, yeah.
It's Chadwick saving Shuri from Namor and saying no, hello.
Yes, but also, what would be the point of that movie, really, right? At least here, I could say, I mean,
the point of this movie also, is repercussions. Black Panther went out at the end of the last movie and said, we will open up to the world. But he's only thinking about himself. He's not thinking about, because he doesn't know. To be fair, he has no idea about Namor. So Namor is saying, look, you guys do whatever you want, but your shit is like affecting me now. You went and spoke about vibranium. That's why they started digging and now they're finding me.
Fair point.
Your bullshit you do by yourself, but don't drag us into it. If you drag us into it, we will retaliate. So he's basically saying your repercussions from your last movies, your big decisions screwing around with the way in which I can predict. We can quibble about whether this is compelling or not, but this is the straight line movement.
I get
because
that
happened, this is happening. Otherwise, Namur would not have woken up now.
Maybe. Yeah, in hindsight, I think the movie that they ended up making was anyway a reaction to repercussions. Much, much, much bigger than...
Yeah, it was that, and then it's gotten overstuffed and whatever with all of these little things that probably should not have been there, and maybe they could have pushed back. It's always very difficult when you're part of a larger factory line production.
See, one thing that I was looking forward to, especially following up from Woman King and our previous review, was the Dora Milaje and Okoye, right? I thought she barely had anything to do in this movie, right? There was maybe one...
She had in the first half and then she went missing.
And she was banished or something, right?
In the end, it's not clear what she's doing.
Yeah, of those three characters, Nakia and Shuri and Okoye, Okoye was my favorite in the first movie as well. I thought she had more to do. I think her, the stunt sequence in the nightclub before the chase in Black Panther, I think she totally owns it, wearing that wig that she's forced to wear.
But again, I thought she had the best action sequence in this movie.
She did.
On the
she
bridge.
Did, yeah. With the spear, yeah. And that was it. I think that was probably the one action sequence that really holds a candle to anything that we've seen in the past, right? Other than that, it was meh. Yeah, so I mean, there's so much happening, too many characters, too much that's trying to do, and she disappears, yeah. Nakia, anyway, spends all her time out, right? She's a traveling salesman in Black Panther also, and she has a new baby now. I don't know if that baby is going to show up in a future movie as the new Black Baby Panther.
Just quickly want to jump in and say something about Okoye, which was... I found it interesting that everybody refers to Ramonda as Queen Mother, and she also does, but in moments of emotion, she refers to her as Mother.
Mm.
When she's giving CPR, she's saying Mother. She's saying it in Wakandan, so it's only turning up as subtitles.
Subtitles.
So she's saying Mai or whatever.
Right.
But she's saying Mother and not Queen Mother. Everybody else is saying Queen Mother. She's saying Mother, Mother. And even when Ramonda banishes her and says, you're no longer general, she says, Mother, please don't take this away from me. All I have is my duty. Let me die for my country and whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like dropping Virat Kohli, right? Sending Okoye away.
Yeah. Which again, great scene for Angela.
I am queen of the most powerful nation in the world! And my entire family is gone! Have I not given everything?
I was going to say, potentially Angela Bassett, outside chance of
supporting actress,
pushing for a supporting actress nomination, given that she's doing so much.
I think nomination for sure. Nomination for sure, I feel.
Speaking about Riri.
Yeah.
A little bit of that side comedy that happens in the college and in her dorm room when she throws something. I think first she throws one of the Bluetooth speakers and Okoye slices it into two. Then she picks up that heater. And that's when these people say, you know what, they try to do the fake out, right? They say, okay, fine, she'll be fine. Why don't you deal with Namor with your heater and, you know, we'll be on our way. Which, nice bit of foreshadowing, because heating is how they finally defeat
Namor. Oh, yes. In fact, which movie were you reminded of? Dehydration technique to deal with the antagonist. Manoj Naik, Shyamalan, science.
Oh, yes.
Science, if you go back. So and that's in that movie, it's also interesting, right? The Earth is inhabitable because it has water, which also then means extraterrestrial beings don't know what water is, and water is probably poison to them, which is what happens there. So yeah, it's actually not dehydration, it's the opposite. They end up hydrating the alien to kill the alien, and here Namor is dehydrated.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of these random things when I watch movies, right? I don't know, you might be wondering, where is this fellow coming up with this rubbish? But yeah.
If you think about it in a straight line and not for a second take away the fact that the actor Chadwick has died, the movie is kind of filled with grief. I was also surprised when they killed off Angela. I was like, how much I think you want to push Shuri to her limit. But you could have just put her in a coma as well. But then the moment she died was when I was 100% convinced that the post-credit scene would happen the way it would. I was like, oh yes, that explains why Nakia has not been around. There's going to be a reveal over there. So I was like 100% sure that was happening. It's interesting to see that timeline as is, right? So if you see it from, let's say you're Queen Ramonda, you see it from that perspective, or you're the people of Wakanda.
Yeah.
King T'Chaka dies.
Yeah.
Immediately, T'Challa becomes the king. Okay. Within a very little while, T'Challa loses that fight and effectively has died for the period in Black Panther. We believe he's, or whatever the audience believes, he's supposed to be dead.
MBJ becomes the king. Yeah.
So you believe he's dead for that little bit of time. Finally, he comes back, he becomes the king. Again, after defeating end of Black Panther. Infinity War happens.
Yeah, it disappears.
Fairly immediate succession. right? About a year later or whatever, Infinity War happens. He disappears off. He's not there for 5 years. Queen Ramonda has become queen. We as an audience know that all of these characters are coming back at some point. So we didn't really have a lot of fear. We were just, you know, which brings up the fact that even Endgame, the first bit of it does deal a little bit with loss and grief,
yes,
and all that.
Yes, yes.
But it's not so much that was there for a plot point just to say, look, even though we all know all of these heroes are coming back, we want to see that for this period of time, it's a real loss that all these people have.
It builds up the dramatic.
But it doesn't deal with grief the way we are dealing with grief in this movie, right? It's not actual loss. But okay, so Ramonda has become queen and King has come back after 5 years. So they've already dealt with T'Challa dying at least twice before he really dies. Now he comes back, he becomes king, and he dies again. Just seems, how many times can people mourn their king? He's just, it's unfortunate the way things have turned out and stuff. If you try to look at this timeline, it just looks very odd. It's just like one after the other, and then the queen has died.
And also, it's only fair that there is another T'Challa in the lineage now to come in.
Yeah.
So the number of times and the way the power centers keep changing in these movies, it's more ADMK, DMK, Tamil Nadu, rather than Britain or Australia, where the prime ministers are changing like every month, right? The new people coming in every month, or at least the same person coming back.
This would have been, this movie would not have had this much of it. It would have been much cleaner. Maybe Angela would not have died in this movie if T'Challa was around, right? If Chadwick was around, this would have been more straightforward action.
I guess.
It would have been a clear Chadwick versus Namor or whatever. And maybe in the end, Shuri would have worn the suit once to come and save him from something, just to foreshadow, because she's played the Black Panther in the comics also. She has stepped in when T'Challa has been sick or whatever. So they would have done a little bit of that. But I don't think Angela would have died. I think here they just had to, for whatever reasons, they went all in on the grief. But I feel it was a bit much at some point. Like even when Angela died, I was like, oh my God, what is happening? Like this is the... We need her around, man. Put her in a coma so that she can come back at the end of the movie or wake up next.
I like this idea of a coma. Like Captain America from the 1940s to whatever, right? What does he go into? Cryogenic sleep.
He just crashes into this thing. Yeah, but it's cryogenic, basically. He basically freezes.
Mr. Man in Interstellar. Talking about the cryogenic sleepers.
coming back to the new T'Challa. I thought that kid was really cute.
I don't know, the way
they played.
I think I'm done. I'm not watching the next.
You're like negative Nancy on everything.
No, the kid was fine. The kid was good. I think, yeah, sure. But I've lost interest though in the franchise. I told you, right? I didn't go for the Thor movie. I would not have gone for this one if it weren't a Black Panther sequel. Right? I didn't go to watch the next MCU movie. I went to watch the Black Panther sequel. It was a decent Black Panther sequel, especially given everything that has gone before. It was a terrible MCU movie, is my take on these things. And it's terrible in a lineage now of terrible movies and TV shows that have been coming back to back. And I don't know, man. I've completely lost my interest in this. Who knows? Maybe once they made their 20th movie and the whole world has started, you know, raving about it, maybe I'll come back and watch and join the dots. But right now, this ain't working for me.
They're generally in a lull. Doctor Strange was quite abysmal. Spider-Man, except for the ending when all three come together, which has nothing to do with the story, just has to do with the fact that you're getting to see three together.
Exactly. It's just fan service at the end of the day.
Eternals, as much as I found some things interesting, just didn't work at all. They're figuring out what they need to do and they haven't quite figured out. In that whole line, I would say this is actually, I may think this is above average, but this is clearly the best of luck. A couple of other things that I noticed this time that are not there in Black Panther also. Black Panther, there is some lineage when you refer to characters, but it's been mostly the male lineage. You only know T'Challa, son of T'Chaka, and N'Jadaka, son of N'Jobu. But you don't actually know Ramonda's lineage. But here, twice they refer to her as daughter of Lumumba or whatever.
Right, yeah.
They refer to Nakia as daughter of Ya. They refer to Anika at one point as daughter of Kiana. I wrote down all these names because I watched it a second time. But they do a lot more on lineage here than they did in the first movie. First movie, only those two got lineage because the lineage mattered or whatever. I think here there seems to be a longer feel of things pass on from one generation to the other. I think he was actively trying to bring that in. Have you seen I May Destroy You? Are you aware of Nikki Nicole?
Yeah. I think she was. What was she doing in this movie? What was that?
Hers went the other way around, right? It feels like her stuff was chopped off.
I think if
Chadwick has died, then you want, if everybody else has gotten more to do, obviously Mbaku has gotten more to do. apart from generally you'll increase the role in next movie, but because T'Challa is not there, M'Baku as a character has got more true. Here I feel like she seems like she's gotten even less, because if this is what she had.
I don't know if she was shoehorned into the script at a much later stage and she might not have even made it to.
No, she was there from the beginning. See, she's a fan, she wanted to be in it, so that was there.
Ah, okay, that seems like something that gets shoehorned, right? Like,
she's a fan, she wanted to be in it, they gave her a character. This is a known character, side character, but it's there. Oh, Dubai might have cut out.
No, she was
there. The last shot. No, but the last shot.
The post-credit.
Not post-credit, but before, when they're showing everybody, Kingdom coming back to normal and all. She goes and kisses Florence Kasumba. What's her name? Oyo? Not Oyo. What's her name?
Oh, there's a lesbian kiss in this movie?
Yes.
It wasn't shown.
She and the other, yeah, that's what I forgot. You're in Dubai. The other Dora Milaje, who has taken over after... Okay. The one who says, I told you not to bring the spear.
Ah, yes. Oh,
who's
so
been
she...
there since the first movie, you know? I forgot her character.
Yeah.
I just feel like she should have had one more proper arc. She had a little bit here and there, but she never had like an arc. She got to play with the new weapons and show a new face of Dora Milaje, but that's fine. That Okoye herself eventually wore that suit also.
Midnight's armor or whatever that is called.
Midnight Angel.
Midnight Angel.
Coming to young T'Challa also. Toussaint has a big history. Again, back to Narain's history corner on the intermission. Yes, so Toussaint apparently is the name of the Haitian general who led the slave revolt.
Okay.
It's the only known slave revolt against colonizers that was successful. So they got independence in the late 1700s.
Wait, which country?
Haiti.
Oh, Haiti. Okay, got it. Oh, all right, cool.
François Dominique Toussaint, and the last name is very French. Louverture, I don't know how to say that name. But yeah, he was the general and he led them to this thing. And then he became general for life till he died or whatever. History is a lot more complicated, but it's the only successful slave revolt ever. Slave rebellion to independence that ever happened.
Other than the ones written by Quentin Tarantino. Yeah, anyway, good.
Other than one and only Django. Three editors on this movie.
Okay.
I'll say one editor's name. You can tell me whether you recognize it. Kelly Dixon.
I've definitely read that name.
Yes. You've read it. You've also heard it.
Kelly Dixon is from a podcast.
Yes, also. But if you've read the name as well, then podcast plus what podcast of? I'll give you 5 seconds.
Okay.
She's one of the house editors in the Breaking Bad BCS universe. She's edited almost every other episode on Breaking Bad.
And she comes in the, of course, the BCS podcast. Of course, yes.
She runs both the podcasts. So Kelly Dixon was one of those things. In BCS, I think she only edited in the first 3 seasons and then stopped.
But she runs the, she ran the entire BCS Insider podcast, which was, yes.
A little bit of tie-in for you there. Maybe you'll have slightly more favorable looking back at...
No.
Wakanda Forever.
you can only edit good material.
But within this, and just to be Shuri's arc, even though it's a repeated arc, which is why I asked you to watch that little scene from Civil War.
Vengeance has consumed you. It's consuming them. I'm done letting it consume me.
That's right. The arc of this movie. She had to go through it. Even though it's repeated, I thought they did her arc well and she did a good job. Overall acting was fine.
It was fine. Yeah.
But I think they are struggling with what are the different kinds of stories we can tell and what else can we do here. Obviously, all of, like you said, representation, all great, powerful, everything fine. So I went in really with how do we deal with the loss of Chadwick, and I thought this movie did
as good
a job as anyone can do with that kind of loss. It's
absolutely
not like there's any wonderful way of doing it.
Literally, yeah. I think the first 20 minutes of the movie are really good. Yeah, I think it does a great
job. And they come back in the end also, right? I mean, she sits there and says bye to him. She's part of this journey is her not being able to say bye to him. Her feeling that she failed him. She had a guilt of, I could not save him with all my technology.
Yeah.
Which also, weirdly enough, she opens up to Namor about it.
Correct.
Underwater. Yeah. She says, you know, why did the ancestors give me this gift if they, you know, if I couldn't save my brother, what is the point of having?
Which, by the way, is a throwback to the first part where T'Challa also has the guilt of having not being able to save his father.
Ah, correct. Yes, you're right.
Which MBJ points out.
when they're fighting, this boy is your king. He could not even save his own. So yeah, good point. So a lot of mirroring between those two characters. Vengeance to almost exactly the same arc as Civil War arc. Obviously, performances are all good. Nakia, Lupita Nyong'o comes in here and there and pinch hitting whenever required. That was our review of Black Panda. Black Panda, it's
Black Panda. It's a crossover between Kung Fu Panda and Black Panther. Wakanda forever. Nanga pesikite irpom.
Correct. This is what happens when you've been recording for 90 minutes straight.
Yeah.
That was our review. I hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what you thought of the movie. What do we have coming up, Nitin? Do we know what we're doing next?
We don't. Much like the MCU, we need to figure out our shit. And hopefully we'll come up with, you know, blockbuster episodes much like the MCU. And this arc shall continue.
Okay. You should hear from us in maybe a couple of weeks. Let us know what you think about the movie. Let us know what you think about the podcast. Please keep the feedback coming in. We've enjoyed reading it. We've enjoyed reading even criticisms. So please keep telling us what else you want us to do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
As usual, rate, review, subscribe to the podcast on your platform of choice. You can reach out to us on Twitter at youintermission. You can reach out to us on email at
youintermission@gmail.com.
Wrapping up, Nitin.
Nothing much. Wakanda forever.
Kukulkan. The feather serpent god.
They called him Kukulkan. The feather serpent god.
Bye-bye.
Bye, thank you.
Thank you.